welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and this hour, Drama, later on from the CBS Radio Workshop from 1957. But first, the Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater brings us Flesh and Fantasy, an adaptation of one of the three stories that were featured in the anthology motion picture and heard on CBS on July 16, 1945.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild players in an episode from Flesh and Fantasy, Universal Pictures' absorbing study of destiny and the power of suggestion. It stars Vincent Price as Podgers, Edward G. Robinson as Marshall Tyler, and Dame May Whitty as Lady Pamela Hardwick. The Lady Esther Screen Guild players in Flesh and Fantasy. In a private room in a London hospital, a man who's apparently been injured, and another man who sits beside the bed. Only silence for a moment, and then...
I had to tell someone, Dr. Whitley. That's why I asked for you, though you won't believe me. I know you won't.
Tyler, I've seen some strange things in my life. I'd suggest you tell me everything from the beginning.
All right, from the beginning. I suppose you knew Lady Pamela Hardwick. If you did, you must have known the sort of person she was. Hard, brittle, with a sense of humor that was more cruel than amusing. The whole thing started at one of her parties. Rather monstrous affair. All sorts of people there. And she'd engaged a palmist to entertain her guests. His name was Podgers. Strange sort of a chap. Cold, cynical. Almost, but not quite, impertinent.
Mrs. Carrington, you have been passing through a very dark period. But things are going to improve. You will hear from someone very dear to you.
No. There's no one very dear to me anymore.
Madam, it is in your hand. You will hear from your husband.
Oh, that's impossible. My husband... I'm sorry. Excuse me, please.
Why, Mrs. Carrington?
Lady Pamela.
Oh, you know Marshall Tyler, of course. Oh. Good heavens. What put you in such a state?
That man, Mr. Podgers... He said I was going to hear from Roger. I'm afraid it was the shock. You'll have to excuse me, please.
Marshall, isn't it thrilling? She's going to hear from Roger.
Really? Well, Roger Carrington has been dead for 2 years, hasn't he?
Almost three.
You know, Lady Pamela, I think you get a kick out of upsetting your guests.
Well, why not?
Well, last week it was that bogus media manifesting supposed ectoplasms all over the place. The week before, voodoo.
Well, my liver won't permit me to drink. I'm too old for romance. And we English are so beastly dull. We're not like you Americans. We need whipping along.
Well, can't you find some better way to squander your money?
Should I give it to the poor and start a revolution? Oh, Flora.
Hello, Pamela. Hello, Marshall.
Flora.
Hello.
I got the most wonderful palmist here. You will set him read your hand.
Oh, really, Pamela? I don't
but
think
I insist.
Better.
Come along.
Now, Pamela, please.
Now, Lady Flora, you may as well relax and enjoy it.
And Mr. Podgers? Here's Lady Flora. Will you read her palm?
If the lady will give me her hand.
Well.
You play the piano.
That's right. Lady Flora is passionately fond of music.
Madam, I think you mean musician. And you, sir, why do you think I'm a fraud?
Who, me? I haven't said one word yet. But you can hardly expect me to approve of all this.
Everyone has a right to his own opinion, sir. But may I ask why you disapprove?
Well, because if you can read the future in our palms, we human beings are only the puppets of some force from which we cannot possibly escape.
Precisely.
Well, you're kidding, aren't you?
Not at all. May I look at your hand, sir?
Oh, sure.
I do not claim to be an oracle, but it is very plain that you're a lawyer.
Hmm.
A bang-up one. A bachelor? And head over heels in love.
You think so?
It's right here in your hand. And the lady in question will say yes.
Well, you're wrong there, definitely.
I assure you, she will. You're a very lucky man.
Oh, but this is wonderful. I must find Rowena. Where is she? Where's that girl?
Mr. Podgers, any more misinformation?
Well, let me see. Your hand indicates that...
Well?
Nothing. I see nothing at all.
Yes, but you do. I can see by your face.
Oh, please, Mr. Podgers.
Well, The gentleman will go on a trip somewhere.
Probably on his honeymoon.
Yes, yes, that's it. On his honeymoon.
I don't think.
Well, there you are, Rowena. I've been looking for you, my dear.
Have you?
Why, have you been hiding out here at the conservatory? What's the matter with you?
I've just been talking it out with Gerald. I should have broken with him months ago. But it's ended now, for good and all.
You're through with Gerald, and you're going to marry Marshall Tyler.
How did you know?
Never mind. Come along. Marshall. Marshall Tyler.
Calling me?
I believe Rowena has something to tell you. Something very personal. I'll busy myself with the work.
Rowena, you want to say something to me?
What
is it? The way you look. Is anything wrong? Can I get you a drink?
No. But you can marry me if you like.
Oh. Just to make a silly prediction come true.
I mean it, Marshall.
Now, Rowena, don't joke. I've waited so long.
Too long? Don't you want me now?
You know I do. I'd give my life. It seems so strange. That ridiculous
Ladies
chap.
And gentlemen,
how could he?
We bring you a special last-minute bulletin.
That sounds important, Pamela. Turn it up.
Sir Roger Carrington, well-known explorer, given up for lost over 2 years ago, has been found at last.
Sir Roger.
Sir Roger and his party are all alive and well.
Hodges was right. He was right after all.
Mr. Podgers, my coming here to your place tonight was no casual whim. Last night, you saw something in my hand. I demand to know what it is, and I'm prepared to pay you £100.
You aren't, really.
You doubt my word?
Oh, no, not your word.
On my ability to pay?
No, you're very rich, of course.
Well, then, let's not waste any time. Here, look at my hand. Well?
What a contradiction of moods you are. All mixed up and intricate, like a little Swiss watch.
I'm not here to inquire into my character.
Character is the label of the man, Mr. Tyler, and he wears it in his palm. Yes, it's all here. The perfect lawyer. Vain, egocentric, no real conviction. You'd have made an excellent criminal lawyer.
I'm not interested in crime.
But you will be. About 15 years ago...
I want the future, Mr. Podgers, not the past.
There are some things it's better not to know.
Well, regardless of what it is, I demand that you tell me.
Even if you're very brave...
Well, speak up. What's in my hand?
Murder.
Murder?
You're going to kill someone, Mr. Tyler. That will be £100, please.
Yes. Yes, I... That's funny. My wallet. I'm sure I had it in my...
You will find your wallet at home, on your bureau.
Yes. I'll send you a check.
Oh, and on your way home, it might be wise to avoid Whitechapel Street. Good night.
No, it's absurd, ridiculous. What can he possibly know about me? Oh, the man's a fool, an imposter, a downright...
Yes, sir? Did you say something, Mr. Tyler?
Oh, no, Paul. I'm just thinking aloud.
Yes, sir. Sometimes when I'm driving... Stop! Blimey, you did! Stop me! You all right, sir? Didn't hit you, did he?
No. No. Oh, where are we, Paul?
Whitechapel Street, sir.
Whitechapel?
Nasty spot, sir. Shall we be getting on?
No. You take the car, Paul. I think I need a little walk.
Walk, Mr. Tyler. Walk, Mr. Tyler. You can't get away. It's in your hand. You're going to kill someone, Mr. Tyler.
Why? Why should I? Why do I have to?
Are you talking to me?
Huh? Oh, no, I wasn't. I was just...
Funny. There ain't nobody else about. Now, don't you go talking to yourself like that, chum. Folks like to think you're Barney.
Barney? Maybe I am. Maybe I am going out of my mind.
Now, take it easy, fellow. Pull yourself together.
Yes, I must.
Now, how could Podgers really know?
But he knew about Rowena, didn't he?
Shot in the dark.
And Sir Roger Carrington.
Coincidence.
And my wallet.
Well, you're always forgetting your wallet.
And Whitechapel Street.
Oh, forget it, will you? Put it out of your mind.
Yes, yes. Yes, I will. That's what I'll do. I'll put the whole thing out of my mind. Monday. It's been 2 days, and nothing's happened yet.
You're going to kill someone, Mr. Tyler.
Wednesday. 4 days.
You're going to kill someone, Mr. Tyler.
Saturday. It's a week, but perhaps...
You're going to kill someone,
Mr.
Tyler.
Oh, stop it! Stop it! No use. I can't sleep. I can't work. I can't think.
Why don't you do something about it, old man?
What, you mean murder someone deliberately?
Well, suppose you could just press the little button and kill some worthless old beggar 10,000 miles away. Would you do it and be free again?
Yes, 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 I think I would.
I see. Murder is simply a matter of miles.
Yes, but someone like that, old and worthless.
Well, aren't there people like that right here? Old and worthless?
Absolutely worthless. Who? Oh, any number of them.
Nancy Durant, Samuel Worthington, Pamela Hardwick.
Oh, no, not Lady Pam.
Well, why not? Would you miss her?
No. No, I wouldn't.
Well, would anyone miss her?
No, I can't think of anyone. Yes. Yes, yeah, she is a selfish old wretch. Always sick.
You'd really be doing her a good turn.
Besides, she's pretty old.
70?
Oh, 75 at least.
Well, what's she got left?
A few years at best.
A few weeks?
Well, a few months.
She's ideal.
Well, still... She's always been very fond of me.
Oh, well, if you're going to let sentiment interfere...
No, I'm not. It's Lady Pamela, all right. Now, all I've got to decide is... how.
The second act of the Lady Esther Screen Guild play will follow in just a moment. Now, a word from Lady Esther.
Have you the courage to look 10 years younger? Have you the courage to look lovelier and more romantic? Women say my new shade of face powder, Bridal Pink, does just that. They say they can actually see the years slip away when they apply Bridal Pink. They can see the faded, yellow look vanish from their skin. See it take on a quality of beauty and radiance that's like a magnet, attracting all eyes. Bridal Pink is a new kind of shade, based on an entirely different principle in color blending. It's not for just one particular skin coloring, but for four basic skin types. Bridal Pink is equally flattering whether your hair is blonde, brown, auburn, or black. You see, Lady Esther face powder isn't just mixed in the usual way. It's highly pulverized by the tremendous force of hurricanes. Pulverized so fine, it feels light as a feather on your skin. Yet it completely covers tiny lines and blemishes. And though it's light and cool as a summer breeze, it clings 4 hours and longer. It even makes your features look smaller and daintier. If your druggist is sold out of Bridal Pink, ask him to order it for you, but accept no other shade. For remember, only Lady Esther Bridal Pink face powder can give you the look of a woman in love. That happy, radiant look. That look of complete self-confidence.
And now, Lady Esther presents the second act of Flesh and Fantasy, starring Dame Mae Whitty, Vincent Price, and Edward G. Robinson.
Thank you.
hospital room again. The same two men. And after another long moment of silence.
So, you decided to kill her, Tyler.
Now, Whitley, what's the matter with you? Haven't you been listening? I didn't decide. The whole thing was decided for me.
How did you go about it?
And I got hold of some poison. Saconitine. And then I bought a box of chocolates. Very lovely box. Cloisonné, 17th century, I think.
And you poisoned the chocolate?
Yes, just one of them. Wrapped in silver foil.
And then?
And then I took it to Lady Pam.
Marshall, how sweet of you. What a charming little box. And how's Rowena?
Oh, she's...
Is the wedding day set?
Well, not quite. I think
she'll make a wonderful wife. Not the least bit in love with you. So she can't fall out of love. Well, what do you think of my little Mr. Podgers now? Wasn't he superb, the way he told Flora about her musicians?
Oh, yes, magnificent.
They tell me that at a rehearsal of the symphony the other afternoon, a messenger from Flora arrived saying, same time, same place. And all 60 men stood up and said thank you.
Well, tell me, did Mr. Podgers have any special revelation for you?
Silly. I only find other people's secret interesting.
Well, that little box has a secret for you.
Oh, tell me.
Well, it's a new cure for that liver of yours.
Not really. Why, they look like chocolate.
Well, they're put up by an American. I'm told they work wonders.
Oh, how amazing. I must take one at once.
Oh, no. Please. If you take one without having an attack, it might be the end of you.
Very well. I'll wait until my next attack. Really, Marshall, you're very thoughtful. Rowena's done you a great deal of good.
Yes, worlds of good. As a matter of fact, I'm on my way to see her. Mm-hmm.
To plan the wedding, no doubt.
No, to postpone it. I must go to Paris.
Oh, but that's too bad. For long?
Well, frankly, I don't know. It all depends. It all depends. Rowena, what are you doing here? What brought you to Paris?
I had to come. I had to see you. Marshall, why have you run away from me?
But I haven't.
You said you'd be gone only a few days, and here it's going on to 3 weeks. I thought you...
Now, Rowena, please, I can explain. Oh, excuse me. Hello? Yes? What? When? Yes, of course. Yes, Monday at 3. Goodbye.
Who was it, Marshal?
My office.
What is it? You seem so elated.
Elated? Well, naturally, that call meant that we can go back to London.
And?
And we can be married.
When?
Right away, Monday. Day after that. All day Monday, I'll be busy.
Another client. Which one this time?
Lady Pamela Harder. I think you know her.
Well, of course I know. She's my godmother.
Oh, yes, that's right, of course.
Marshal, what does she need you for?
Well, she doesn't need me, my dear. She died this morning.
I'm glad you got back in time, Tyler. I know Pamela would have wanted to hear when I read the service.
Well, I wouldn't have let anything interfere, Your Grace. Did she suffer much toward the end?
Not at all. It was very peaceful.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Very glad.
By the way, I've had a notification from your office. It's true about the will?
Yes, quite true, Your Grace. Her entire estate goes to the church. You'll be chief executor.
She was a good woman, Tyler. In some respects, a very great woman. Well, I think most of us are here and have to look to it. If you'll excuse me now.
She didn't suffer. She didn't suffer at all.
Marshall, look at this enchanting little box.
Where did you find that?
On the coffee table there. Cloisonné. Must be several hundred years old. Oh, wouldn't you know that Pam would fill it with chocolate? Good ones, too, I'll wager.
Rowena.
Only one, Marshall. I figure can stand it. This one, I think, in the silver foil.
Don't eat that, you hear? Give it to me.
But Marshall...
The best place for these is on the fire.
Why, darling, anyone would think they were poisoned.
Rowena, you must forgive me. I
beg your pardon. We're about to start the service in the drawing room.
Thank you. Coming, Marshall?
Yes, you go along. I'll be right in.
Poor dear, you're so upset by all this. I understand. You were so close to Pamela. I know you want to be alone. I'll wait inside.
She never ate that chocolate. She never ate it.
No, she must have died quite naturally.
Natural death.
That's too bad. Now you'll have to pick someone else.
Well, I can't. There's no time. I'm getting married tomorrow.
Well, there must be someone else. Perhaps he's here. Dear just look around.
We're gathered in this familiar place. We meet in the memory of one still with us. For she is not dead. She has not gone. She has merely attained that spiritual serenity, that true state of peace for which we all yearn.
Did you hear that?
And no human being could desire a happier release.
Listen.
Than this swift and painless passage into the kingdom of heaven.
That's it.
Oh, death, thou great liberator, where is thy sting indeed?
Death, the great liberator. Don't you understand? He wants to die.
You see, Your Grace, I thought that if I came to you, told you the whole story, you might be able to give me the answer.
It's possible.
With that constant threat hanging over him, ruining his life, his career, everything he holds dear. Is he to blame for taking his fate into his own hands?
This man, a client of yours, you say?
Yes.
In my opinion, he must be quite mad.
Oh, no. Believe me, he's sane. Sane as you are.
A victim of hallucination.
Oh, no. No such thing.
Surely, if it had been intended that we poor mortals should know what will befall us on the morrow, God would have provided some natural and simple way of our finding out. Cigarette?
Thanks.
He's on his guard now. Watch your chance.
I cannot believe he would have entrusted such important matters to characters like this Mr. Podgers you tell me about.
There's a knife there on the desk. It would be so easy.
Believe me, Mr. Tyler, the fault lies with ourselves. The sin lies in trying to pry into what is no mortal affair.
A knife. Pick it up.
But Matthew says it better
now.
Than...
Now.
Put down that knife, my son. Lest you harm yourself.
Your Grace, I... forgive me, I'm sorry. I've got to get out of here.
You're going to kill someone, Mr. Tyler. You're going to kill someone.
Mr. Tyler.
Oh, hello, officer.
Bad night to be walking on the bridge, Mr. Tyler. Where's fog we there?
Yes, yes.
A fine night for murder. You better watch it, sir.
How long must I walk? How long must I wait? How long must I...
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
Oh, my fault.
Oh, not at all. I should have... Why, it's Mr. Tyler.
Podgers.
How are you, sir?
How am I? How could anyone be after what you told me?
Well, you asked for the truth. I didn't put it in your hand.
No, but you put it in my mind.
You wanted to know. You insisted.
Well, look again. Perhaps you made a mistake.
Mr. Tyler, you'd better go home. Get some sleep.
Perhaps you made a mistake.
Perhaps I did. Now, come around and see me tomorrow.
No, now.
Well,
here, look at my hand.
Well, my word, how extraordinary.
Yes.
I believe I owe you an apology.
Apology?
Yes, it doesn't seem to be there.
Yes, it is.
No, I swear.
Liar!
I tell you it isn't. Stop! Let go!
I'm going to kill someone.
Let go!
Going to kill someone.
What is it there? Now, what's going on? Come now, you can't be disturbing. Why, Mr. Tyler. Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but I'll have to take you along.
No, you won't. I won't let you take me in.
Stop! Stop, I say! Look out there!
I didn't see the lorry until it was right on top of me. And then everything went black. When I came to, I was here in the hospital.
Where you've been ever since?
Well, they can't send me to the gallows. It wasn't my fault. I tell you, the whole thing was in my hand. Ordained, foredestined since the beginning of time.
Sorry. Yes? Dr. Whitley speaking. Oh, yes, he's quite out of danger. Yes, of course, I'll tell him. He'll be glad to know.
Who's that?
Lady Pamela Hardwick.
Lady Pam?
Yes, she just got back.
Got back?
From Scotland. She's been there for over a month.
And how could she? I don't understand.
Tyler, you've been a very sick man. Rather nasty accident you had. By the way, if you're able to use your hand again, you can thank Dr. Podgers for it.
Dr. Podgers?
Our chief surgeon.
Well, then it was all imagination.
From the opiate. Most of it. But not all. I'll let you in on a little secret. Rowena broke her engagement yesterday.
What you mean? She's free?
Free, white, and willing. So if you want to disobey my orders and use the telephone...
You know, Dr. Whitley, one of these days, I think I'm going to shake your hand.
Thank you, Vincent Price, Edward G. Robinson, and Dame May Whitty, for a most thrilling half hour.
Well, surely, Mr. Bradley, you must know that we all consider it a privilege to appear with the Lady Esther Screen Guild players. The Motion Picture Relief Fund and its country house are both largely supported by this radio program, and we are more than proud to share in that wonderful work.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild players will present Smiling Through. It will star Lorraine Day, Sir Aubrey Smith, and Van Heflin. Be sure to listen. Edward G. Robinson is starred in the forthcoming Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture, Our Vines Have Tender Grapes. Dame May Whitty will soon be starred in the Broadway play, Thérèse Raquin, directed by her daughter, Margaret Webster. Vincent Price can soon be seen in the 20th Century Fox picture, Dragonwake. Flesh and Fantasy was presented through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, producers of Uncle Harry. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Lady Esther's Screen Guild Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 16th of July, 1945 on CBS. In that same year, the Lady Esther program would take on two other adaptations of the two other stories from the motion picture Flesh and Fantasy, and the original movie was actually cut down from four stories to three, and that fourth story was given new life a couple of years after its release and named Destiny. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for the CBS Radio Workshop and the story People Are No Good, heard on September 8, 1957.
From Hollywood, the CBS Radio Workshop.
Have you ever gotten up on the wrong side of the bed? Have you ever awakened hating the world in general and yourself in particular? If you haven't, this program is not for you. If you have, we respectfully direct your attention to this modern morality tale.
The CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind, presents William N. Robeson's production, People Are No Good, adapted by Mr. Robeson from an original story by Joyce and Ferdy Groffé, Jr.
The city awakens. In a million sleep-soured rooms, the metropolitan Chanticleer shatters the smooth black chalice of unconsciousness. Sleep-stuck eyes slowly open. Unwashed faces contort in yawns and hackings and honkings, adding their fetid impurity to the poisoned air. Down the grimy eastering streets, the pallid sun cheerlessly prevails against the murky morning. The city awakens. Joe awakens, too.
Shut up.
Another day. Another lousy day. As dull as yesterday, as boring as tomorrow. Turn on the radio, Joe. That's it. Now, what's next? Oh, yes. Reach for a cigarette. Light it. And cough. You do it every morning, don't you, Joe?
That
time is now 7:33. The weather is lovely this morning, fair, with just a nip of fall in the air. But it's a good day, a fine day, a day to be glad to be alive in.
What's the joke got to be so cheerful about?
He's paid to be cheerful, Joe.
In just a moment, the early morning news. But first, one of your favorite songs and mine, I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby.
I can't give you anything but love. You said it, friend.
Come on, Joe. That's enough morning meditation. Let us then be up and doing with a heart for any fate. Come on, Joey. You gotta get up.
Why?
You know why, Joe, to go to work.
Why?
You know why, Joe, to earn a living, to pay the rent.
For this flea bag?
And feed yourself.
On that garbage at the corner lunch stand.
And clothe yourself.
A suit with two pair of pants every couple of years.
Oh, come on, Joe. Quit the griping. Get up.
What if I don't?
You will. You always do. Now, up we go. Attaboy. And into the bathroom to scrape your face.
Ah, what a kisser.
It'll look better after you've shaved it.
3.5 minutes. Why does it always take 3.5 minutes to shave?
Try going faster.
And cut myself?
Or slower.
It always comes out 3.5 minutes.
You're in a rut, Joe.
You're telling me.
You ever try putting on the left shoe first?
You kidding?
Or getting into your jacket right arm first?
You just follow up the whole day.
Something's bound to.
Yeah, it always does.
Now, all ready? Out into the big, beautiful world you go. 82 steps to the lunch counter at the corner. 82 steps to the next scene. The matutinal scene, which is played the same way, with the same dialogue, morning after morning after morning.
Good morning, hey, Joe.
What's good about it? Hey, come on, what do I always have? Coffee and a donut. Don't I always have coffee and a donut?
Honey, boy,
I didn't
get off to the start without having a few loving words from you each morning.
Hey, can't you get something else on that lousy jukebox?
What's that, boy? They're playing ours.
Oh, what's so funny, huh? What's there to laugh about?
Hey, you had a rock side of bed this morning, Joey, huh?
Joe's bed only got one side, the wrong one.
But you crumb bumps. For 2 cents, I'd...
You'd what, Joe?
Throw this cup of hot coffee in their faces.
I imagine somebody could scrape up the 2 cents if you really want to. Well, it might be worth it. Change the routine.
Yeah, what'd it get me? 30 days in jail, probably.
I guess you're right, Joe. That wouldn't be any change.
Huh?
Your whole life's a jail sentence.
You ain't kidding. People always pushing you around, telling you what to do, telling you what not to do. Why does it have to be this way? Why can't it be different? Why? Why? Why?
Good morning, Joe.
Marilyn, honey.
Sleep well, darling.
Yeah, just great.
I hope the silk sheets didn't scratch.
No, couldn't be more comfortable. Hey, Marilyn, baby, I thought you had an early call at the studio this morning.
Let him wait. My husband's comfort comes before my new picture.
Oh, you're a doll, a living doll.
I thought you might like breakfast in bed.
Gee, great.
I cooked it myself. Omelette bean herb with truffles and a split of champagne to wash it down.
Oh, baby, what did I ever do to deserve you?
I ask myself the same question over and over. Every morning I have to pinch myself to make sure I'm not dreaming.
Pinch me too, Marilyn, baby. Hey, Matt,
hey,
what do you think you're jabbing in the ribs?
If you're finished, I'd like to sit down there.
Joey, what do you think? You got a lease on that
too? Ah, you crumbs. You lousy bunch of crumbs.
A half block down the avenue to the subway station. A half block of people rushing toward a hole in the ground. Sleepy people. Belching people. People with toothpicks stuck in their greasy mouths. A half block of grimy stores. A cat stretching in a delicatessen window among the hams and salami. A monstrous woman sitting in front of a secondhand store, the morning sun warming her bulbous bulges, highlighting the single black hair growing from the mole on her chin. the silent store window of the undertaker with its dusty potted palms. There's where they belong, isn't it, Joe? All of them.
You said it. All of them. 6 foot under.
The kids, scrawny, skinny. The little girls playing jacks on the front stoops. And the little boys planning the day's devilment. The traffic roaring up with the changing lights. The flatulent trucks. The screeching cabs mixing the dust of 100 yesterdays with today's carbon monoxide. And the blind man at the subway entrance selling the morning papers. What's new this morning, Joe?
Nothing. Nothing's new. The same old news. Same old headline. Another test bomb fired in Nevada. Another sex murder in the Bronx. Another war threat in the Middle East. What's the world coming to? And whose fault is it? People. That's who.
Dirty water down the gutter. Dirty water spewing into the sewer. Dirty people down the street. Dirty people sweeping into the black hole in the ground, into the subway station, where the stagnant air hangs heavy and moist, moved only by the coming and going of the roaring train.
People!
Hiya, Joe! How you doing?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, Joe. Pete Radich, all you need to top off an already ruined morning. Some days you're luckier. Some days you get an earlier train or a later one, but this just isn't your day. Here he is, grinning, wide awake, cheerful, Pete Radich. Jerk.
Hey, long time no see, pal.
Don't seem long enough.
Hey, the wife and I was bowling last night. We looked for you.
Bowling's for the birds. What's so funny?
A bird bowling. Can you picture it? Have to be a pretty big bird, pal.
Yeah.
Boy, was she hot last night.
Who?
The wife. Bowled better than a 500 series. Well?
Well, what?
Ain't you got nothing to say?
What do you want? I should give her a medal?
Yeah, always gives me the willies when the lights flash sharp that way when she goes over a switch.
I like it. Then I don't have to look at all these creeps.
Yeah, not me. I don't feel right until the lights come back on. I like to know there are people around me.
Not me.
Why?
People are no good.
Ah, come on, Joe. You don't mean that.
You tell me. What's good about them?
Well, people are people.
That's just what I mean. And there are too many of them. They take up too much room. They smell. They talk all the time. They make you work day in and day out, and they throw you a few bucks for your trouble, and then they take most of that away in taxes.
Hey, now, wait a minute. You're mixed up, aren't you, Joe? The government takes the taxes.
The government is people, ain't it?
Well, not exactly.
Government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Ain't that what it says?
Yeah.
But it ain't true. It's the politicians.
What's the politicians?
They get the grass.
Oh, Joey, I don't dig you. You really are mixed up.
I ain't mixed up. If I had my way, I'd get rid of the people.
All of them?
Sure.
Joey, you worry me. You know what I think you need?
What?
You need to get married.
Ain't I got troubles enough?
Ah, you forget all your troubles when you got a nice little ever-loving wife to come home to.
Come home where? A cold water flat like you got?
Well, of course, we're just starting out housekeeping, but we got our bid in for that new housing project over by the river.
Those cracker boxes where the plumbing don't work. And the walls are made of tissue paper and cracked plaster. I know all about them.
Bad and not bad, Joe.
Hey, how you going to pay the rent if your wife don't work too, huh?
Well, when you marry Joe, you're building towards something.
How can you build anything in a city? They're always tearing it down. Tearing you down. Tearing at you with noise and dirt all your life until they finally tear you down all the way and stick you 6 foot under. For a little while. Until they dig up the graveyard so more people can have a new housing project. There's only one way to lick it.
Oh, so you figured out a way to lick it,
huh? Sure, like in this picture I saw. There's this fella, see? And he's shipwrecked on a desert island.
Oh, you mean Robinson Crusoe?
Yeah, that's the guy. Boy, he had it made, all alone. Nobody to bother him. Plenty to eat, plenty to drink, and no people.
Until he found his man Friday.
Yeah, that's the part of the picture I didn't like.
And me, I'd go nuts on a desert island.
Not me.
There's nobody to talk to.
What's more important, nobody to talk to you. Man, that would be paradise.
Yeah, there goes them lights again.
That's more like it, huh, Joe? You can't see the people in the blackness. You can't see Pete's silly, cheerful face anymore. Or any of the others. Wonderful, isn't it? Now, take a deep breath, Joe. We're coming to your station. The lights are coming on.
Empty. Where is everybody? The car's empty. There's no one. No one at all. Oh, man.
The car still stinks of people, Joe. The door's open. Get off while you can.
Hey! Hey! Wait a minute! Hey!
Take it easy, Joe. You wanted a desert island. You've got it. Just take the nearest exit. Here's your desert island, Joe. Manhattan Island. The listener will understand. It is tiring for this omniscience to remain always within the confining walls of the human mind. The listener will then forgive this omniscience the luxury of emerging now into a wider, deeper, more omniscient and omnipotent dimension, in short, to cease being a protagonist and assume the role of a true narrator. The listener is asked to imagine Joe now, a tiny figure alone, a speck in the bottom of a skyscraper canyon, somewhere south of 14th Street, somewhere west of the East and east of the North Rivers, a silent speck on a silent island, a motionless speck where nothing moves. A lonely speck in the middle of an empty avenue intersected by an abandoned street. A human being without people.
It's like... No, I never seen it just like this before. Once it was nearly like this. One Labor Day morning just before sunrise. Walking up 8th Avenue, it was almost as empty. But then a checker cab belted across 34th Street and spoiled it all. Empty. Empty. Beautiful without people. No, this is nuts. This is screwy. I'm dreaming. So I'm dreaming, so I don't want to wake up. I like it. So quiet. So very, very quiet. Hey! Hey! Yeah, I gotta be dreaming. The time's come to pinch myself. Ah! So I'm not dreaming. I'm awake. So this is really happening.
Joe alone. Joe walking down the endless, empty streets past the second-hand stores in the front of which no bulbous woman sits warming her bulges, past stoops where no scrawny children play, past an undertaker's window still silently framed by two dusty potted palms. And the air about him, no longer poisoned by the exhausts of 1,000 trucks and cars, is pure. And the sky above, no longer polluted by the myriad activities of millions of people, is bright, and the sun beats down with a strange and unnatural heat.
It's hot. Thirsty. Gotta be somebody around. Gotta be a bar open, no matter what kind of a holiday this is. It's gotta be a bar open. Yeah, there's one in the corner. Yeah, it's gotta be open. Jukebox is gone. Charlie's Bar and Grill. Hey, Charlie's is uptown on York Avenue in the 90s, and I'm downtown. Well, I guess there must be more than one. Only this looks like the one on York Avenue. The one I was in last week with Pete and his crummy friends. Same jukebox, same lousy song. So they all look alike. Hey, hey, bartender. Hey, where is everybody? Okay, so I'll help myself. Now this is a bar whiskey. This stuff is slop. Ah, here we are. 10-year bottle and bond. Wow. That calls for another one. Hey, wait a minute. Whoa. I'm late for work. Gotta tell him I'm late. Gotta find a phone. Where's the phone? Oh, there on the wall. Gotta tell him. Office don't answer. But they gotta answer. This is Wednesday morning. Somebody's gotta be there. Somebody's gotta answer.
Joe alone. On the telephone. The office doesn't answer. The operator doesn't answer. Information doesn't answer. The police don't answer. Ring. 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 No one.
They gotta answer. Somebody's gotta answer. I shut up, your technical squawk box. I'll change your tune. Let's see. Yeah. G16, love me tender. Yeah. That ain't the record I want. Shut up. That's better. Quiet. Nice. I need another shot. Figure this out. Oh, that TV over the bar. They ought to have a news bulletin about what's going on. Let's see. Channel 2's the best bet. Hey, but where's the picture? No picture. Just that same lousy song. What you trying to pull? Huh? Where's everybody? Where's everybody? Huh? What's that? A cat. A real, live, scrawny, lovely alley cat. Hey, kitty, kitty, kitty. Hippus. Come on, kid.
Joe and the cat.
Hippusy.
Joe, desperate for a living contact. The cat, cat-like, suspicious. Joe on his hands and knees, pleading, enticing, seducing. The cat, back arched, spitting, feinting at him with bared claws.
Come here, pussy. Hey, kitty, kitty. Hey, kitty, kitty.
Joe, desperate for a touch of something living, lunging, missing, lunging and at last connecting, holding the cat tightly in his shaking hands, holding the cat too tightly.
No. 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 I just wanted to pet you. I just wanted to hold you. Touch you. I just wanted to hold you. No, no, no. Don't be dead. Don't be dead.
Joe alone again. The cat lying on the bar in a funny pile. Like a dirty old undershirt that missed the clothes hamper. Joe running now. Out from Charlie's bar and grill. Out into the empty street. Joe running wildly, searching, madly seeking something alive. Running down to the corner to another bar, its doors invitingly open for business. And across the plate glass window, the same sign, Charlie's Bar and Grill. And from the jukebox, the same song. And crumpled on the bar, the same still form of the cat.
Oh, no.
Joe running down one street, up another. And at every corner, another Charlie's Bar and Grill. With its jukebox blaring and its bar bearing the same still form of the cat whom Joe couldn't give anything but love. Joe running, running, running up and down and back and forth across his desert island. Joe alone, running. Joe alone, screaming.
Where is everybody?
Joe, alone.
People Are No Good, written, directed, and produced by William N. Robeson, based upon a story by Joyce and Ferdy Groffé, Jr., a CBS radio workshop from Hollywood. Music was composed and conducted by Amerigo Marino. Joe DeSantis was heard as Joe and John Daner as the narrator. Others in the cast were Shirley Mitchell, Jack Crucian, and Peter Leeds. Next week, the workshop will present from New York, Time Found Again. This is the CBS Radio Network.
CBS Radio Workshop, on Tuned to Yesterday, heard on the network on September 8, 1957. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.